This episode of AVXL is recorded on September 20th, 2017. We're going to talk Atmos. Should it be in your next home theater build? iFi's Micro IDSD Black Label. One more is dual driver AMC Lightning in the ear. And why I am highly amused by Bose QC20s. More from CDA 2017. This time, let's talk amps and processors, projection screen ratios, the big giant DIY speakers that Robert loves, and quite a bit more. All coming up on AVXL.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right, I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and audio awesomeness. No matter what your budget is, speakers and headphones and amps and file encoding and audio processing and DACs and ponies. Robert, I'm excited.
I hope so.
Oh, my goodness.
How you doing, man?
I'm excellent. I am Patrick Dorton. You know me from AVXL and Tech Thing and various other places. Hey. I occasionally show up on tested.com.
Yes, you do. I am Robert Heron. I am a display expert.
You are a display expert. I'm an audio obsessive.
That's the short version of what I do.
You are a
display
expert. Stare
at the pixels.
Measure the pixels scientifically. Oh, my goodness.
Objective measurements. Subjective nothing.
Someday I will have an objective measurement system. I'm actually working on objective measurements for speakers. It's a nightmare.
I should bring in my calibrated mic, and I've got every bit of either room analysis software or sound analysis.
I have a calibrated mic.
Toning, it's generation, and...
Basically, I need to find an open park and a six-foot-high like speaker stand and a mic stand to do an open-air... First, it's, you know, we'll talk about this
okay.
on another episode.
I was going to say, put it within a meter.
Yeah.
Point it right at it.
Yeah.
Or where you are.
Yeah, and I'll just sort
it
of...
It depends what you're doing.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. That's a side topic.
This is such a side topic.
Jumped off on that one.
And we do that sometimes. We got some questions about used gear. And let me be blunt. I have a family. I live in one of the most expensive parts of the United States, if not the world, in Northern California.
You bought it a good time.
Yeah, well, otherwise I'd be living somewhere else. I bought a beat-up fixer-upper at the bottom of the market. And I bring that up because, like I said, we've gotten some questions about used gear. And I'll be honest with you, used and refurbished is my friend. You know, if I take a look at... let's see, ATI amplifier. I think Audio Classics is the place that has like the rights to the B stock from ATI. And of course, I can't find it. But, you know,
I think that is a good way to find deals, especially on gear mm-hmm. that is gently used. Or somebody
yeah.
bought it and it sat relatively unused the whole time they had it. And that's the hardest part for me is to know or to figure out how the gear was used or abused prior to you picking it up. So,
I have certain
TVs I can find pretty obvious things pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Either diving into a service menu to see how long it's actually run to just picture performance.
Here's a thought, right? With, you know, I've been buying refurbished computers. My first projector was refurbished from Optoma. I've bought refurbished Macs. I've bought refurbished Dells. The thing about monitors for me buying used is that, you know, monitor
displays
technology displays.
Okay.
Sorry. Living room type 1080p or 4K displays is that the technology right now, especially in the 4K, is moving so fast. You know, and the prices are staying so low that you have to be getting a phenomenal discount on something that hasn't been left on for like 22,000 hours
right.
constantly playing the Weather Channel. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, a 1080p projector from 2 years ago is probably still pretty good.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah, see,
needs
but
a
you
new
have,
bulb.
You have components within that, though, that will age and mm-hmm. do need to be replaced, in particular with projectors, the lamp module.
Right.
And unless it's a laser or an LED-based projector. Those are almost bulletproof nowadays.
Right. The laser ones.
As long as it wasn't, you know, left in the most dusty environment ever
right.
and is choked full of crap, those would be good deals. I think LCD televisions, the thing with TVs, it all depends on how carefully it was set up and protected through mm-hmm. its ownership. I know as soon as people buy a new set, the old set suddenly, not to say it's discarded, but...
Right.
Sometimes you run into folks who aren't, they don't have the original packaging or there is no way for it to be stored in a protective way. And that's where you can get into, you know, you put a little extra pressure on that screen surface, suddenly you've got odd artifacts that will never go away.
Right.
Or in the case of old plasma displays, somebody could have had some uneven image wear watching your favorite baseball team all season long, now wondering why the logo is burned into the screen. Or you have very obvious things where pixel defects, lines, in the case of even like old beloved Pioneer plasmas, or I've seen this on Sony's too, the old school Sony plasmas, where you get either a red line or a red push or something like that. Electronics start to fail, or capacitors start to go and cause very odd problems. So LCDs generally, the way they're built, if it turns on quickly and the picture, you don't see any obvious defects, chances are that LCD is going to continue to run because you're dealing with LED lights, no moving parts except for maybe a fan internally. And as long as the ports are okay, that you can actually get a signal into it, I think those are fine. Those are great deals to pick up, especially if it's like your second TV or something. You need it for a spare bedroom or a playroom or something like that.
Right. It's funny, like, so you look at stuff, you know, I've bought used, you know, buying used speakers, you have to be careful, right? Because, you know, for example, I wanted to hear some Vandersteen stuff. I wanted to hear it not having to sit in a showroom and have somebody staring at the back of my head. You know, not that I can understand why somebody might stare at the back of my head. Most of the audio places around here, the advantage of shopping for audio gear in the Bay. Yeah. Well, A, because we're finally of a certain age, and B, because we're in one of those parts of the country where some of the scruffiest looking people in the neighborhood are engineers that make staggering amounts of money. So, you know, they're a little, you know, less obnoxious about us wandering in our daily clothes. But, you know, so I picked up a pair of Vandersteen, I want to say 2CIs off of Craigslist really cheap. And the reason I went for the 2CI is because that was the first one they did with a non-rubber surround or with a synthetic surround sound, so the woofers don't fall out of the speaker surrounds.
So components within that design would arguably last longer.
Yeah.
And don't have to worry about, you know.
You know, I've got a set of Paradigm speakers that I loaned to the warehouse up there that are 25 years old and still taking names and kicking ass. They were pretty advanced technology for their time. They weren't expensive, but Paradigm was doing some pretty crazy stuff with materials. You know, I've got a pair of Tekton mini lures over there.
So in the case you were talking about used projectors, and that would be one thing to know right off the bat, is that most of them are still lamp-based, and you may have to replace that lamp to get good image quality out of it. And that could be an additional expense right off the top that you were not expecting.
Right.
So that's one thing I always keep in mind as well. At least if you're going down that route, look up whatever the part you might have to replace is going to cost you and to weigh that into what you're about to pay for it.
Yeah.
And maybe you can get a better deal if you fire up that projector and go, oh, you know what? This is a very dim lamp, and I know I'm going to have to throw a new one in here. That's going to be $200 or more.
Price it out before. And make sure you price it out, in that case, from a legitimate source. Don't assume the cheap place actually has a legitimate lamp. I mean, you know, the ATI amplifiers I'm using now, they're as good as anything. You know, you can spend a lot more for an amp, but I don't think you're going to get much more in the way of clean audio. And they're built like, you know, military airplanes.
Exactly. For equipment like that, it's going to last.
And it's, you know, they sold for the 1505 I bought is a 5-channel, like 150 watt per channel amp with fundamentally no audible distortion. You know, that sold for $1,700 new. I bought it for $400. You know, my ATI 1202, I want to say, you know, that probably sold for, you know, $1,300 new. I bought it for $225 off of eBay.
So I guess the takeaway would be that for some items, you can buy used, I think, without really thinking about it too much, as long as it's in decent shape.
And, you know, and it's, and a lot of it's like, you know, you don't buy used car subwoofers from teenagers unless it happens to be the one teenager who's, you know, meticulously dressed and obviously is, you know, some sort of feral nerd. Well, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, we laugh, right? But it's like, yeah, I buy a ton of used gear. I've bought used headphones from a dealer off of eBay, but I probably wouldn't buy used headphones off of eBay from a stranger.
There's certain things I absolutely would never buy used, like HDMI cables. What's the point? When literally I can get a couple of good ones shipped right to my door for $10, and I'm like, yeah, okay. Those are disposable. I'm not looking for used cables or anything like that. Or,
well, you know, if you've decided that you need to have $3,000 cables and you see them for $500 on eBay, by all means, waste your money on your $500, $3,000 cable. Personally, I'd rather you spent that money on speakers, but it's not my money. Do what you want to do.
On the TV side, I think nowadays, too, there are still some good plasmas out there that you might be able to pick up used, but I'm finding most of those owners are hanging on to them until they die.
Yeah.
In some
because
way
they're in love with the black levels.
You, if you think about it, we have a great local TV repair shop where I live, and I always factor in what is it going to cost me to get this fixed, or if I can't do it myself, versus buying something new that could replace it for the same amount of money.
Yeah.
And we'll get into this in a little bit. Somebody was looking for a recommendation for a new screen.
Yeah. Or, I mean, basically.
And I had somebody email me this week asking this very same question, and, you know, if you have something that has an issue, there's number one rule. If you have a product that currently has an issue, I guarantee you, you're not the only person who's experienced that issue.
Yeah.
I have never seen that to be the case where it is a one-off thing. In that case, somebody might have figured out a fix or a way to get the service done on it in a very affordable way. That's, I mean, Google and
search
YouTube are
forums,
your friends.
Google, yeah.
The forums.
And for example,
ABS
if you look in... If you're looking at if you see an AV receiver or something for sale and the deal seems too good, Google it. Does it have a, you know, a common problem? Does some, like, you know, you mentioned capacitors blowing out on the Samsung TVs
or any TV.
You know, there are
some a common issue.
I remember the amp. It was an AV receiver that was like from a, you know, kind of a semi underground audiophile company, but it happened to have an issue with blowing out one of the primary power transistors, and you know, and that saved me, you know, a couple $100s and, you know, probably 6 to 8 hours of disassembling and soldering and reassembling if I'd bought this thing.
One thing on a TV I'll always do, if ever possible on a used set, is fully reset it back to the factory. Mm-hmm. And because you never know what a person was doing to that set when you were looking at it. And this applies to projectors and pretty much any display device. Always reset it back to the factory because they may have been tweaking everything 10 menus deep.
Yeah.
And you may not be able to go back and undo everything easily. Yeah. And it's just a good quick check just to see, hey, after I reset it, did it fire back up? Does everything look okay? Those are things I do.
And never trust the open box specials at Best Buy.
I don't think I've ever done that, although I'm always that's more of an unknown, without a doubt. I have no experience there.
Oh, man. I used to shop that stuff, and then invariably I found it was like 10% off, but the box was missing or parts was missing. It's like
that's
some
the
places
worst.
The used or you know, returns, like, you know, I bought my first Sennheiser Momentums online from a company that did, you know.
I have two friends. They each bought pre-assembled barbecues because they were too... They were in a hurry. Just give me the floor model that's assembled. Without fail, there was one part missing, like, oh, the electric starter's gone. Or
the vent.
Yeah. So not everything applies to this, but there are a lot of electronics that simply sit there and behave.
Yeah.
And really don't age much.
Well, you're running a 9-year-old motherboard at this point? You just upgraded the processor and that PC and everything else is like 6 or 7 years old.
I was rather amazed that actually worked
out. You know,
I
bought that ATI, I want to say the ATI 1202 I bought off of eBay. They wrapped it in a single layer of cardboard. You know, it arrived with profoundly damaged packaging. You know, I rescrewed the RCA jacks in, visually inspected to make sure nothing fell out from the damage. And that's when I realized just how beautifully constructed those are.
With old AVRs, too, always look up the feature set and do a search for potential issues that you may run into. Mm-hmm. My roommate had, I believe it was a Denon, and it is pretty damn old at this point, but it was one of the first that had HDMI ports on it. And it turned out they literally did nothing more than put an HDMI switch inside of an amp. It was in no way connected in any way.
Oh, that's funny.
To the decoding or anything. It was literally just an HDMI switch. And I probably spent a good 30 minutes messing with this thing before that finally kicked in. And I'm like, all right, this what I plug into these HDMI ports is in no way being processed by this amp in any way, shape, or form.
I need an optical input.
Had that realization, I just started giggling to myself and then promptly ripped that out and put in a different one. But
good plan.
Yeah.
From the drool-worthy hardware department, let us discuss iFi's Black Label. The iFi Micro IDSD Black Label USB DAC and headphone amplifier, which is a extruded aluminum enclosure that's probably about an inch longer than your phone. And It contains dual Burr Brown DACs, DST512, PCM768, 2XDXD, true native DACs, some custom op amps, some really high quality components if you are a capacitor nerd. Turns out it is not just an IDSD painted black. They've got some new sort of, they got input from the user base about how 3D Plus and XBase Plus is tuned. They tweaked the analog signal processing circuits. They declined to get too much detail on that.
That looks like a nice piece of hardware. At least they put it in, look, appears to be an extruded aluminum case.
It is an extruded aluminum case. And it's got a little pad, and there's a couple of, like, you know, look, I've got rubber wristbands.
Oh my goodness!
That can attach this. I mean, on one hand, it's a little Rube Goldberg because you're using rubber bands to hold the, you know, what is a piece of high-end audio gear to your phone.
But that's what it is. Yeah. I could say it just as easy as you could. It looks big enough to have where I'd keep it next to a computer or a notebook or something like that. But hey.
You know, it's funny because I used it.
It travels.
We did a bunch of plane trips recently. I've used a bunch on a desktop.
And that's powered off of a USB port.
It is powered off of an internal battery, which is charged from USB port.
Ah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's
drain your phone trying to drive that, buddy.
Yeah, it's some pretty, and it can actually, you can charge your phone off the internal battery, the internal lithium ion battery. So, right, I talked about dual Burr Brown DACs, which is kind of a classic name. Custom op amps, i.e. the things that power the headphones. AMR Global Master Timing Femto Precision Clock System upgraded for super low phase noise slash jitter, i.e. there's not going to be any wonky sound on it. It'll play just about anything but MQA, MP3, all the way up to 512 DSD, 768 PCM, 2XDXD. And I used it with everything from headphones off of the headphone jack. It's got a quarter-inch headphone jack on the front. And ran it into a pair of single-ended amps. There's RCA jacks on the back, onto desktop monitors, USB from a desktop. It also has a SPDIF, an analog SPDIF in out on the back.
Nice. Do they make a version by chance without a battery pack?
I believe so. There's a whole bunch of, they make a whole lot of stuff.
That's something I probably wouldn't need. I really am at this point looking for a DAC I can connect to my computer to just drive whatever headphones I put on them consistently.
Oh, I have a list for you.
Oh, I know. I have been reviewing our episodes of late. The word dragonfly keeps going through my head. I'm likely going there. But anyway.
Oh my goodness.
That
so
just looks nice.
Yeah, it's a nice piece of hardware. So I did a bunch of portable streaming with it off the iPhone. You can basically use the Lightning to USB adapter or Lightning to USB camera adapter to run it off of an iPhone. Like I said, it's got a built-in lithium-ion battery. It's got a charging output on it. Man, it sounds exquisite. It's pretty amazing.
I like it.
You know, it's like my JDS Labs desktop gear, but it's strapped to my phone.
4,800 milliamp hour battery pack in there.
Yeah, it's a fair amount of power. You know, figure anywhere between 6 to 12 hours of battery life, depending on how high you turn it up and how much processing you're doing. And it's a really nerd-friendly, it's a very geeky device on one hand, it's a very practical device on the others, because, you know, one, they've got settings so you can play around with how the filtering is done from the DAC, right? So,
cool.
You know, they have a standard mode, minimum phase, bit perfect. You can adjust the power modes, which I found really useful. They have, like, eco, normal, and turbo, and then they've got what they call the IE match. So you can turn it off, you can do high sensitivity or ultra sensitivity. And the idea is that, you know, depending on what you're running, like, for example, you know, Fostex T50 RPs, you got to turn the volume all the way up. Well, you can tweak the settings on this so you can still get a decent range of volume control and have all of the power you need to power those. But those settings work particularly horrible for efficient in-ear monitors, for example. So you can tweak it down
into
eco mode or high sensitivity. You can switch between a preamplifier output, which means you can use the volume control on the front of this, or a direct output if you want to use the volume
control. That
would totally
help optimize battery life too.
On a preamp. Yeah. Well, that's more for if you're using it with sort of a desktop or a desktop, if you're using it with a full preamp or AVR or preamp into an amplifier.
Got it.
The things I haven't really discussed on this is the XBase and 3D Plus. XBase is essentially a low-end boost if you have headphones that are particularly weak on the low end, Fostex T50 RP. And then the 3D Plus, which is sort of a sound expander. Expand.
Well, it's funny. It reminds me a lot of the crossover circuitry that was built into the old headphone amplifiers.
Interesting.
Where it kind of bleeds a little bit of the left into a little bit of the right, which creates a situation much more natural, right? Because when you're sitting in a room and you have a couple of stereo speakers, the totally. Sound from the stereo speakers gets bounced around on a delay and hits not just the left speaker just doesn't hit your left ear and the right speaker doesn't just hit your right ear.
That energy is everywhere.
It is everywhere.
In all directions.
It is. So the idea is, what it does is it sort of boosts a fair amount of the high-end signal. If you are treble shy, it might be a little bit much for you. But it also kind of moves the thing out from to the left and right side of your head to make it feel more of expanded through your head, which I don't know if that makes sense.
That's cool, though. What kind of price point are we talking here for this beauty?
If you've been looking at $6,000 headphone amplifiers, it's a bargain. If you've been looking at $100 headphone amplifiers, it might seem expensive. It sells for about... $442 on Amazon, list for $549.
But say you're a headphone collector, though. Say you have a few different ones and you like to take things on the road or out of the office or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like this would be pretty ideal for that.
You can come
up with some presets. You have the battery pack built in. That would give you, you're not sacrificing necessarily your phone's life or your mobile device's life to keep your headphones driving at appropriate levels.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like this is a very flexible unit for the mid to high end, not even the highest end, but just mid range headphones on up.
There are people who have told me with a straight face that they can't take any DAC under $3,000 seriously.
No, they're that crowd too.
I'm willing to bet $1,000 cash that most of those people can't tell the difference between their $3,000 DAC and my $300 DAC in an AB blind test.
Understood.
But this is pretty fantastic. I like, in any case, I played around with pretty much all the settings on this. The 3D Plus, definitely cool for creating better, like a sort of soundstage or 3D imaging for your headphones. Maybe a little bit fatiguing because of the additional high end, but sounds good.
Flexibility, though, I think is the key there. Just being able to work with a variety of different requirements for, depending on the requirements for your particular set of headphones. And when you get into things like, electrostatics or something like that.
Well, that's a whole different amplification situation.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be using that with this necessarily. But damn, that's pretty slick, actually. I dig that. It's a little beyond what I would need for my craptastic PC setup. I wouldn't buy this for a computer, per se.
Mm-hmm.
Although it would be just fine. I wouldn't say no.
Mm-hmm.
But
I was impressed.
Nice.
It's certainly not the most inexpensive thing I've tested, but certainly one of the most impressive. And
it has actual toggle switches on it.
It's really the build construction is really nice. Crazy.
Yeah.
The component selection is like
This thing feels like it could take a good drop, although there's no way I would want to do that.
Please don't.
No.
As much as I'd like to buy it, I certainly don't want to buy it after it's been broken. So iFi is the company. They're out of Britain. The website is really easy to find. It is ifi-audio.com, and we will put a link to that in the show notes.
Exquisite.
Oh, my goodness. So I told you I'd talk about one more dual driver ANC Lightning in-ear headphones.
Oh, the noise canceling ones.
Yeah. And,
I've had those for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah. I took them on three flights and several drives, one particularly long drive back from San Diego. I was laughing, right? Because my traditional reaction to noise canceling or active noise canceling headphones is like somebody's like, you just can't fly without these. And they hand me their headphones and I put them over my ears and it feels like my skull's about to collapse because like the overpressure from the tremendous amount of noise reduction. And then I hand them back and I go back to, not using noise canceling headphones. And the thing that surprised me about this is with the in-ears, whether we're talking about the one more dual driver, and then I grabbed what I thought was kind of the most comparable option, which is the Bose QC20. They don't have a lightning jack on them,
But the Quiet Comfort 20 acoustic noise canceling, not active noise canceling in-ears. They sell for about $250. And they've got a lithium ion battery pack slash amplifier slash, you know, the noise canceling stuff. Comes off of a standard RCA jack. They do an Android version and they do an iPhone version. But it seems to be kind of, that is, if you're using a wire, not wireless, that's pretty much what the go-to for most people. And with both of these, I did not have the sensation that my head was about to collapse, which is a big plus for me. You know, but you know, I made one big mistake with the One Mores is that I used what looked like my standard size ear tip, which turned out to be too big, and I didn't realize that until I was on the flight down to San Diego, but my first flight down to San Diego in 2 weeks, and I had to sort of press them in to get a seal, and then all of a sudden everything was quiet. And of course, I hadn't brought the giant selection of tips that they put in the box. So on trip two, I had all of the tips, and I'm like, I went to a bigger tip, and they fit even worse. And I finally figured out that despite the fact that I have ears the size of Kansas, what I needed was a smaller tip to get it deep enough in the ear canal to make a seal. And that was a huge difference. So experiment with the tips and don't assume that just because something works with around the house slash in the vehicle noise, it's going to deal with the giant 95 to 105 constant drone of a jet airplane.
That's a great tip, actually, because I often find it isn't until I'm in that seat locked in that plane for a few hours where I really then am really evaluating the tips on my earbuds. At that point,
and smaller and deeper rather than bigger and more shallow, which sounds kind of rude when I say it out loud, but QC20s, the Quiet Comfort 20s are fascinating. Like, depending on who's doing the measurement and what frequency they're measuring at, they're doing anywhere from like 30 to 45 dB of attenuation of the external noise.
That'll help.
They run to, I don't know, 600 or 1,000 hertz, but they don't really touch anything above that. That's one of the things the One More crew was very excited about. They're like, we got our noise cancellation up to like 2,000. Hertz, which is very, very high for noise canceling. So they're like, we're not just looking at the drone or the airplane engines. We're trying to get some of the higher noise,
too. Have to hear the person sitting next to you.
Oh, my goodness. You know,
That sounds like a great balance, though, between, what was the call? 150, I think you said, for the One Mores?
150 for the One Mores. I think they may go up to $180, but right now they're selling for $150 with
the
lightning connector.
Man, that'd be on my short list if I was to keep the gear minimal.
Well, was
I like stuff that can just plug right into the phone.
Well, the other thing that's nice about it, right?
Or a phone.
The thing about the QC20s is the noise cancellation is amazing.
Good.
Right? And just plugging them in and not playing any music through them, everything got quiet, everything got calm.
It's interesting that they're doing that on a device not part of the earphone.
Well, this design's been around for a few years.
It's just
Thought
it was kind of clever.
The next generation is like wireless, and they've got like the little thing that sits on your neck that holds the batteries and stuff. But
so I have a pair of Samsung over-the-ear noise-canceling headphones that are Bluetooth, blah, blah, blah. And they work really well, but all of it's built into these, so they have to be a little bit bigger to accommodate batteries and the microphones and all of it.
I'm slowly transitioning to wireless, but I'm not there yet. But the thing about the QC20s is the audio sucks. Let me be blunt.
Okay.
I loved them with no music through them.
Right.
They are great for audiobooks and podcasts.
A dollar pair of earplugs.
As soon as I played music, I mean, like, you know, Amber Rhubarb's Novocaine, you know, all that noise reduction makes it really easy to hear. There's some very early sort of violin plucking bass notes before the drums pick up, and I could hear all of that. But it was amazing listening to, like, man, my notes for, like, Frightened Rabbits, I Wish I Was Sober, the highs seemed rolled off, bass heavy, lots of bass, bass is sloppy. Whole last minute of song feels kind of blown out. Clutch's Green Bucket, another one of my favorite songs. Quote, cymbals suck, seem smeared / bacony. Crash cymbals around 2 minutes, ugh, smeared. Wow, better love bass with these headphones. Because they have they seem to have a real V-shaped tuning, and somebody, whoever tuned the Bose QC20s, really likes bass.
Did it for the mass market.
Did it? They did it for their market, but and I was a little freaked out the first time I put One More dual driver the ANC on, because I was in my truck, my big diesel truck, and I could feel the diesel coming through my feet because it's that kind of truck. But the cabin noise I couldn't hear, and I didn't realize until I pulled one out that I couldn't hear the wind noise either, and I was kind of like, whoa. You know, the music on the dual drivers is not quite as detailed, especially at the high end, as the triple drivers, my kind of standard go-to everyday earbud. You know, but there's less background noise. And as stupid as that sounds, if you live in a place or work in a place, for example, one of the people I talked to, they're like, they don't really fly, but they work in a server facility, in a colo facility.
I think you mentioned
where
this.
There's like, you know, there's it's, you know, 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 square feet of servers with fans, and there's a constant 90 dB hum in the background. He was like,
considering your noise protection needs for many environments, not necessarily, you know, being on the road or something like that, but it could be work related.
Yeah.
It'd be at the vent above your head to, worst case scenario, a server room
with
forced air flying everywhere.
Oh, and my
those
goodness.
Those are loud environments where it's you need something to help out with that.
You do.
And it sounds like these are a pretty good option.
I got to say, for 100
the money.
For 150 bucks, they are a fantastic deal. If you like music, I would take them in a heartbeat over the QC20s, Bose QC20s.
Great option for anyone with the lightning-connected mobile device.
Yeah, if all you care about is like getting rid of all of the noise on an airplane and maybe listening to some audiobooks, and the QC20s are fine. But I got to say, like, you know, I was like, yeah, I could carry the QC20s, but then I'd carry a second set of earbuds to listen to music once I was on the ground, because the audio, the music and the, I'm not there. I'm world-class disappointed with Bose's music reproduction.
I'm such a lightweight traveler. It's like, I mean, if I can put it all in a backpack, that's all I'm bringing.
It's a good plan.
I'm not carrying extra stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, if you're a college student and you're looking to save money, Spotify and Hulu has a bundle together. So if you're a college student, you get Spotify Premium and Hulu's TV and movie library for $5 a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Actually, 20.
You know, it's normally $18, like $22 if you choose Hulu's commercial free tier. But Spotify is looking to go public, and they are hammering on the number of subscribers. They already dwarf Tidal in terms of prescribers by a pretty significant multiple.
I mean, for $5 a month, though, to get decent sound and decent television programming, of good variety of both.
Man, Spotify Premium. If you don't have
sure
Spotify
if you're
Premium,
to
just go get it now.
$5.
Yeah, especially if you're a student.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, man. More CD 2017. Yamaha was there. I really like their RN303 network stereo receiver. Not the best performance in terms of overall amplification. 100-watt stereo, 0.2% THD. You know, at what volume, I'm not sure. But I'm sure it won't be bad unless you're trying to like light up a 5,000 square foot warehouse with it, but includes Wi-Fi, wireless direct, Bluetooth, AirPlay, Spotify, Tidal, a whole bunch of other services. It'll support DST 5.6, FLAC, Wave, AFE, you know, the list kind of goes on. Sells for $300 MSRP, so it should be a little bit less when you purchase it. The RN803, if you're looking to step up in performance, this is 145 watt per channel, 0.019% total harmonic distortion, which is fundamentally nothing you can ever hear. Phono input on that, AirPlay, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, again, Spotify, a bunch of other services. That's
Tidal.
Sold for $800. And then something I really liked, they had a couple of boxes, the WXC50 and the WXA50. So the WXA50 is a wireless streaming amplifier. It's like a small 1RU half rack box. It's a small box you can put on a rack. You can stand it on its side with a couple of feet. There's a 12-volt trigger on it. 55 watts per channel, 0.02% THD, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, AirPlay, DLNA. It's got Control 4 certification, and it's got a built-in ESS Saber DAC, E9006A. So that whole package with the amplifier, the preamplifier, the streaming and stuff, it's like $500. Pretty much selling for that. That's $500 MSRP. That's what it seems to be selling for on Amazon and other places. And then they've got the WXC50, which is the wireless streaming preamplifier, which has basically everything but the amp from the WXA50, and that sells for $350. A lot of cool options in the sort of stereo receiver market. And
the nice thing about Yamaha's Cast product, though, is that it's small. So, you know, if you don't want to either, you can't run, say, Zone 2 audio off the main AVR, at least you could get this into it. Mm-hmm. Network connectivity on this? Or not.
Ethernet, wireless.
See? So it just makes for setup being so much
easier.
They had
a rack with like 12 of these in it as kind of a demo on the show floor.
This would be something I'd consider too, for even basic home theater use if you just had a pair of separates, you know, just a couple of speakers that you're not using. Here's something great where
Quick,
you don't have
head
to
ELAC. Look at the debut lineup.
I am
look at the Unify lineup. How about those T2s from Emotiva?
That's just great.
We got kind of nuts on
a lot of people
last
are turned off by AVRs that are in that traditional format. It's about 17, 18 inches wide, about 13 so inches deep, 8 inches high.
Just that's large enough to be a pain in the ass.
Seriously. So if you can put discrete amplification for maybe a couple good channels, you're not looking to do 5+1 with this.
Right.
That's perfect.
Emotiva's RMC1, it is their flagship 16-channel AV processor. You know, we mentioned the T2 last week. This was the AV processor that fed the amps, that fed the T2s and all the speakers in the ceiling.
The RMC1.
Yeah, we heard it in a 7.4.4 arrangement, which is, you know, 7 ear-level speakers, 4 subwoofers, 4 Atmos speakers. Not the final tuning, but as far as I'm concerned, it didn't really matter because it sounds better than anything I'm ever going to buy. This is a $5,000 AV processor.
But if you really did want to go with an incredible number of speakers in a room to do,
seven channels, 6 overhead, 4 subwoofers.
Yes. This is these are the types of products you'd have to be looking at to just stack and rack and do it. So
32-bit analog digital analog conversion using AKM Verita DACs, which are pretty amazing. 8 HDMI 2.0B inputs, dual HDMI 2.0B outputs, support for HDCP 2.2, native DSD handling for the DSD geeks out there. Yes, since I haven't said it, it is 4K UHD. And if a $5,000, you know, processor sounds like a bit much, they also had their Basics, which is their entry-level lineup, A5175 5-channel power amplifier, which sells for $800. And Emotiva sells all their stuff direct off the website. But this is an $800 5-channel power amplifier, you know, 175 watts RMS per channel at less than 0.1% THD into 8 ohms, 2 channels driven, THD plus N of less than 0.07%, and a signal-to-noise ratio of 150 dB reference to full power. Because I am a snot, I would prefer the RMS per channel for all channels, but like every single amplifier or AVR spec I've seen, like it seems to be referenced to 2 channels driven. Oh wait, here it is. Power output all channels driven, 125 watts RMS per channel, 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz, THD less than 0.1% into 8 ohms. So, and if you're driving 2 channels, 250 watts RMS per channel, 20 to 20, THD less than 0.1% into 4 ohms, or ohms, if you want to actually speak like you understand electronics, 175 watts RMS per channel into 8 ohms. But yeah, figure like 125 watts RMS per channel when driving all channels, all 5 channels. And that's pretty badass. Because there are AVR receivers out there that when you drive all 5 channels, fall on their face at a significantly lower ratio. But think of it as a 5-channel 125-watt amplifier, which should be enough to make your eardrums meet in the center of your skull. Oh my goodness. So, you know, the triggers, inputs on this, you know, front panel controls.
That's the nice thing, the flexibility of this, having either just having separate amps or something like an AV processor. And then if you do have home automation stuff set up, you have all of those adapters, plugs ready to go for triggering events or whatever. And I like it.
Good stuff.
I do.
One last thought before we go. The ARC architectural series from ELAC. I don't think it's on the... I can't find it on ELAC's website yet, but a couple of the standouts for that, along with those in-ceiling speakers we talked about last week, 5.25-inch three-way in-wall with concentric driver. So it's like a 1-inch tweeter and a 4-inch mid paired with a 5.25-inch woofer. That's essentially the Unify bookshelf speaker in an in-wall, and then they had a 6.5-inch in-ceiling speaker with a 6.5-inch aluminum woofer and a 1-inch tweeter. So
that was the coolest thing for me. It's just at the Consumer Electronics Design and Installation Association's trade show, they had a lot of great in-wall designs this year. I mean, it just seems like now it is a viable option if you're looking just to get it off the floor or do something better in-wall that's either more concealed or maybe behind some material or fabric that you have covering the walls. There are some amazing in-wall units now, including subwoofers that actually I can't wait to actually see these in a in a full blown installation.
I want to hear the in ceiling subwoofers.
I'm itching for that. And I caught a couple additional reviews too, following up on the show for Sony's new flagship. Well, not flagship, but they're the best projector they're building for this year. At $25,000, the 885, they're laser 4K. And I apparently wasn't the only one who was impressed by that. I'm just reading review after review of people checking it out that just were super, super happy about how that performed in terms of its color performance, detail, processing, and all of that. I think that's just going to be one pretty amazing piece of gear, in addition to just having now true 4K projectors hitting that $5,000 point with decent color. And that's going to be, granted, we're still talking lamps even at that price point. And you can now get laser-based projectors for less, but there's always going to be some kind of a trade-off there. So usually in terms of the color output, but it's just...
Compromises.
A little bit. Just a little.
Brian tweets, if you were putting together a home theater next year from scratch, Greenfield, would you build it for Atmos? Shortest possible answer, yes.
At least have the wires run in the ceiling so you can add those in at will.
And spend the money for, basically it's not that hard to get Atmos support in most AV receivers now. At least two-channel support, four-channel would be better. Absolutely. For nothing else, so you can see the opening scene of Gravity in Dolby Atmos.
Now that we have some formats that take advantage of it, and for a lot of people I know that just did in-ceiling speakers to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, turn those then into the overheads, add a few floor standing, and you would have an amazing setup. So I would be thinking about it. I know most content is still 7.1 at best. So, but there is enough Atmos content out there where I would want to be ready for it. And if not Atmos, maybe one of the other 3D formats too. There are more than just Atmos, so... Just having that ability to have true height channels.
Well, I mean, it's basically there's Atmos and DTS:X.
Yeah.
And nothing else really matters other than most of those two. Most of the Atmos receivers we've seen.
I guess RO3D is just...
Great. Exactly. Find me a title.
Yes.
But exactly. You know, almost everything right now that's supporting Atmos is supporting DTS:X. If all you watch is like, Pride and Prejudice, 1995 BBC miniseries based on the Jane Austen novel, like 6 episodes. Fantastic. The thing that convinced my wife that Blu-ray and 1080p was all right in her world was this particular set of Blu-rays.
Visual presentations.
I mean, it was just like, she was kind of, what am I going to, and we had streamed it and she'd seen the DVDs, but the level of detail and the color accuracy that was available in the Blu-ray was my wife was like, okay, I get it now.
Yeah.
I get it now. But if you listen to, if you are listening to stuff where it's two-channel people talking on the screen, there's not much point to Atmos. If you are interested in, action movies and mayhem, Atmos is going to be a bigger, a much bigger deal. And because it's so supported in the theater system, it is going to be available, in the Blu-rays. Streaming, it's a whole other subject we'll talk about. Well, we talked about last week, probably halfway to death. 100%
agree with you on that one, because it's... Look, unless you are watching that content being delivered on either the streaming services that are going to support multi-channel audio properly or 3D audio at this point, that or you're a disc-based fan already and you're collecting those Blu-rays or UHD Blu-rays now, then, you definitely want to be considering a 3D sound system, either especially if you're doing any kind of new construction or upgrade. It, like I said, at least have the wires run through the wall so you just have that option to drop them in, literally. And once the wiring is done, putting a speaker in isn't all that hard. So,
no. But getting the wire run before it's time to get crazy with the speaker is a good idea.
Makes it so much easier.
Yeah, I was so happy I didn't have to move the electrical outlet in my ceiling for my projector.
Good move.
Speaking of which, Pedro, a.k.a. at Netco, Karika tweets at AVXL, hi, I'd like to ask for your advice on the recommended aspect ratio for a projector screen, 178:1 or 2.4:1. Thanks. I personally would love to have a 16:9 and a 235:1 in one screen. Elite Screens VMAX Dual Series is a pretty cool example of that. though adjusting it between shows might be a wicked ripping pain in the ass.
See, that's the one thing. I mean, yeah. Granted, you're going to spend some bucks to do it, but
it still... I mean, you're basically talking about, because it's two, it's literally two screens, a 235:1 and a 16:9 screen. So it will cover all the widescreen movies, and it will cover the 16:9 that 98% of the stuff that's streaming online or made for television is. But yeah, you're literally paying for two complete screens in one box.
One thing to keep in mind, though, is that most affordable projectors are, you are wasting pixels shooting 235:1 content onto a screen. The black bars are in the video. Those are parts of the imager on the chip are dedicated to projecting black. And the only way around that is with either a projector or a video processor that then can distort that 16 or distort the widescreen aspect ratio into the 16:9 imager on the projector and then have it undistort it through lens processing or through an anamorphic lens or something like that. So, I mean, ideally you would have a screen that has automatic masking where it could detect the aspect ratio of the content and then automatically adjust the sides or the up and down black bars around the screen.
This is
for the
awesome,
right shape.
But out of the cost rate, out of the range for the vast majority of users. I mean, for the vast majority of people listening, 16:9 is the way to go.
I would say so.
And for then, most folks, including me. If you want to spend $1,500 for a reasonable sort of solution, like I like the idea of the VMAX Dual Series from Elite Screens.
You can get quality fixed frame screens tensioned with whatever style material you might want on that screen in terms of gain, its reflectance, or usually starting around 250. I mean, great quality. And for anyone, I mean, you can always point it right at the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I was going to do any kind of step up, it would be something like having acoustically transparent material. Or I really do like the woven style screens or ones that
That's actually what my next screen is. I think I found my next screen is going to be a woven kind of 4K engineered Elite screen in 16:9 that's acoustically transparent. I want acoustically transparent so I can mount the center channel directly behind the delete expletive screen.
I'm super sensitive to hot spotting on projectors, though. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing. I don't care what the screen material is. You just don't want an obvious brighter portion, usually in the middle, that some screen materials can produce. Mm-hmm. And typically, the more brightness enhancing a screen is, the worse its off-axis angle is in terms of viewing it. That's just one other thing to keep in mind. Some of these screens that are neutral or 1.0 gain tend to do much better at off-axis viewing than their extremely reflective counterparts. However, there are some exceptions to that, but generally when you get up into very engineered screen materials, multi-layer and things like that. But let's see. We did talk about on our last episode a particular screen we saw that just by simply scrolling itself up and down a little bit more would change the aspect ratio of the screen. And the screen itself had borders that were very good at minimizing the edges of the image on the projector to make it look right, where you didn't necessarily have black felt around the whole border of the screen. But at the same time, this was a screen that was capable of, by simply extending itself down further, became 16:9. It ratchets back up a little bit, became 235:1 or whatever widescreen format you're doing. To make it practical, you're going to need a projector at the very minimum that can have multiple lens presets.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to...
And that's a fairly expensive... That's not a $1,000 projector. The screen he was just talking about was a Screen Innovation 0G.
Oh,
that's the one that rolls up and down and creates a different aspect ratio.
The whole screen literally comes out of the wall on thin wires. The whole
ceiling.
Roll or out of the ceiling. And so that was the most unique thing of it. It wasn't like the material extends down from the ceiling. Thin wires come down and this whole unit then extends a screen up and down. So you had extreme placement flexibility and then that dual aspect ratio design just kind of natively built into it. Mm-hmm. That was great. But unless I was pairing that with a projector that could either with a button on the remote or auto trigger to detect the format of the picture, you're then going to be playing with things like refocusing and changing the lens setup on a projector every time. And unless you're only watching widescreen movies, you know, that's one thing. But if you're looking at 16:9 content, which there is quite a bit of on the Blu-ray format and the UHD Blu-ray format, that would just be a hassle, to say the least.
Yeah.
But it is doable.
It is doable.
You do have to spend a little bit more money. And speaking of 4K HDR screen recommendations, Austin writes in, "Hey guys, I'm looking for a 4K television for my bedroom that I can hang on the wall, but I'm looking for something with the following: HDR support, Dolby Vision support, 55 inches, low latency for gaming, something under $2,000. Austin said he was considering the Sony X930D.
Mm-hmm.
I would go for the E model, since you can get that. He probably meant the E, the newest one. It has really good processing. But his concern really is latency in terms of being able to provide gaming input on that and having it respond very quickly, so you're not lagging in the most Twitch-sensitive games out there. $2,000 is a huge budget for an LCD. Yeah. So, sure. Generally, I find the Sonys for this year, as you step up the chain, and the X30 and the X930 and the X940 are both two of the higher performing TVs they have in terms of that lag measurement.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of TVs out there that are much faster for much less in terms of absolute gaming performance. That TCL, their 55-inch P-series, I believe it's the P607. So that sucker is still $650 on Amazon. It's only available in a 55-inch screen size. It has support for the formats you're looking for HDR. I believe it does 1,000 nits, full array local dimming, good color support, covering most of the P3 color gamut. The response times, though, are literally about half of what the Sonys are currently capable of doing, down into the sub-15 millisecond response rate times for everything from 1080p through 4K HDR gaming. And that is awfully quick. And I think the price point is right now. You can always spend more. And I love what Sony's doing this year. I think that X930 he mentions is one of the absolute best LCDs I've seen this year in terms of just color and brightness detail. That is a fantastic TV. But if gaming is important enough to where latency is really your concern, I wouldn't expect huge improvements through firmware or anything like that with any TV once it leaves the factory. That's pretty rare to see. Stepping up just a few milliseconds, I have to say, give a look at Samsung's Q7. 20 millisecond response times with HDR, quantum dot color, fantastic brightness, over 1,000 nits. I want to say like probably 1,100 or 1,200. And a good price point on that as well. If you could go above 2,000 now, into the $3,000 range, I'd immediately just point right to OLED. Actually, for 55 inches, you might be able to get an OLED for, I don't think there's a 2017 LG yet that is coming in at that price point. Actually, $2,000. okay, let me take a step back. The sale price, at least, for the 7 series, either the B7 or the C7, looks like the B7 is available. Holy cow. I'm actually kind of impressed about that. All right, this might be the deal of the week. It was above 2K for the longest time, and right now, the 55-inch B7 is $2,000. I would go there. Okay, if you want to blow the whole $2,000, get the LG B7. It's okay. Going to have fantastic image quality, in addition to very good response times, almost perfect motion resolution response, too, on these TVs. There is really nothing bad I can say about that particular model. However, for literally a third the price, TCL and that P607 for a 55-inch screen is going to be the one. That's kind of nice, though. I haven't seen the B7 series drop below $2,000 yet. The C7, the step up just slightly, is a couple $100 more. So there.
Seems pretty reasonable.
That's I'm actually quite impressed with that price-wise. Yeah. If you have a $2,000 budget, and a 55-inch desire? OLED, baby. I got to tell you, just the pure contrast performance alone makes up for any other quirk you could come up with. But that's just everything I've seen on this year's 7 series from LG is it tests well, it measures well, it tweaks quite nicely if you're into calibration. And even out of the box, just really well done.
Yay.
Your eyes will thank you every time that turns on. Did he say anything? Okay, total light control in the room as well. Even more of a reason to go with OLED, because even though you're never going to hit 1,000 nits on this year's OLEDs, it doesn't really matter. Once you can do that incredibly inky black, you're still going to see an amazingly contrasted picture. Viewing angles are generally excellent, and you get that beautiful thin and light design. I'm trying to think of what that TV weighs off the top of my head. I want to say it's like 35, 40 pounds, if that. Easy to install with just one person, but that's actually a pretty good price. Trying to see what the larger version of that TV is, and that's still up there and closer to $3,000, but there you go. That would be my pick.
Nothing wrong with that.
One last thing before we go. Sean posted on AVXL's Facebook page. I was looking at the September issue of Sound and Vision, page 37. Check out the review of the Dayton Audio Apeak CBT24 speakers. $2,000 for the pair, but only $1,295 if you want to assemble them yourself. Sounds like another fun project to do with the kids and a big smiley face.
I don't know.
Those are the speakers Robert fell in love with at CES this year. And
beautiful technology.
Yeah.
Something that was born from, I want to say, naval research and now applied to a speaker system where by the nature of the curve of the speaker itself, yeah, they're basically an arc. And then the center of the arc is closest to you. Mm-hmm. And then the speakers at the ends are actually tuned louder than the speakers in the middle. Yeah. So almost by its very design, it didn't matter where you were standing, up or down, positioning wise in front of the speaker, you had very consistent output in terms mm-hmm. of its dispersion.
Yeah.
And its room filling abilities. Now, I haven't heard like a final version of these. I'm definitely going to read this review just to see what they thought of them. But
well, it's three quick thoughts, right? So there's these, they're like 6 feet long. They arc back, like Robert described.
They're big.
24 2.5-inch full range drivers in each of them. And the kit, they've actually dropped the price. Kit currently sells for $1,000. The assembled CBT24, the Apeak CBT24 sells for $1,495.
Oh, cool. That was the price they were trying to hit when we talked to them at CES. So
yeah, and I got a link to the review we can put in the show notes from Sound and Vision. And I also got to say, I missed a message Sean sent back in March. The Parts Express Overnight Sensations. Those are a really awesome place to start. If you want to build some speakers with your teens that they will get decent audio quality out of, that won't be, because like I love, part of me is really tempted, like I would want to build those Apeak CBT24s, but I also know exactly how much soldering would go into that, yeah, and it would be a metric ton of soldering. It would be a real patience exercise.
It would.
The Overnight Sensations, they sell for $138. Bucks for the pair, and you get the drivers and the stuff for the crossovers and the boxes. You know, and it's nice. It's like Baltic birch cabinets, some decent drivers inside of there. People love them. It's $138 for the pair. So that would be an excellent place to start with.
Yeah, I will say the uniques, at least as I saw them at the show, were pretty much black monoliths that, and I was thinking of these specifically for use as the front two channels for left and right.
That's what they're there for.
I would probably use other speakers for other things, but that was one setup where I was like, you know what? This is in the realm of affordability. $995 for the kit. I did take a good look at that kit, and the more I looked at it, the more I thought about spending the extra $500 to have somebody else assemble it with all the jigs and tools and testing. It wasn't unreasonable, but you need a workshop.
The picture on the Parts Express page for the speaker kit, you know, there's a lot of boxes and a lot of clips and a lot of wires to put together. Maybe less soldering than I thought because of the way they designed it. I think they actually pre-wired everything.
Still, though, just a fantastic design.
Yeah.
And by nature of the way those speakers are configured, it provided just a great soundstage, I thought.
Yeah.
It really, especially if you're dealing with, there is no one great seat in your room. Mm-hmm. You're trying to do it to multiple seats to make everything sound good. These were the type of speakers I was given serious consideration to, or just simply put more speakers in the room.
Tom Kane posted on patreon.com/AVXL. Time for a rant. I hate lower thirds. Nobody turns on the TV to see your stupid and annoying graphics. If you have to send that crap, put it in the VBI and let me choose whether or not to display it. Now it's even getting worse. Sports are shrinking the video to show the whole picture on top of the full-width lower third. You see it with narrow pillar bars on HD programming. Enough already. Just lose it.
I agree with Tom.
1,000%.
What's worse, I'll go back to my sports analogy, but there's a certain broadcaster here in the Bay Area who uses the same hard white graphic on everything, and it's now hopefully not permanently fried into one of my beautiful displays, but
that would be the Oakland A's.
There are an awful lot of graphics on TV, let alone the commercial breaks and other crap. I'm just so one sweet thing about MLB at bat or the streaming version of Major League Baseball is often there are no commercials.
Do you ever have any issues with the feed stuttering or having issues with the quality of the feed or the feed not functioning on Major League Baseball?
Generally, no. However, I do subscribe to a service that gets around the location-based restrictions for blackouts, which annoy me to no end. That should not exist on this planet. They shouldn't penalize me to watch a game that I paid for because of where I lived. And it's only based upon that. For that, I find that I'm almost certain they try to screw with people doing what I'm doing. But they can't fully break. If they fully tried to block me, they break their whole system.
Right.
So there's a little bit of that gamesmanship going on. I do find that I much prefer the image quality coming out of my now UHD streaming box compared to my 1080p streaming box that I was using. I did find that just simply switching up to something with a little more horsepower that does 4K output, even though I'm not seeing these games in 4K. I find that it is at least 1080i now, whereas I was getting 720p-ish looking video before. But stream-wise, it's generally fantastic. And depending on the platform, it is honestly the best way to watch these games for the audio selection. I want to hear like the radio announcers instead of the TV announcers, generally speaking. And on the PlayStation platform, at least, it's a quick switch to between all of the available audio tracks, Spanish, English, ambient stadium sound, or whatever. But I find that to be probably one of my absolute favorite things about it in terms of just the ability to customize it more for the way I want to see it and watch it. Something you cannot do with the Chromecast app, or at least the app on their mobile device streaming to a Chromecast. And little things like that. But I generally have no streaming issues to speak of. I find I'm pretty lucky there.
You found something you thought you left in China.
In my effort to clean up some of my office space today, I found this little bag that actually was, what was it? I sent a Samsung phone in for repair one time to the factory, and they sent it back in a really beautiful little bag with it, and everything is all nice and pretty, and then I proceeded to destroy the phone again, and now it costs way too much to fix. Anyway, that little bag ended up containing my old-school Shure E. I'm pretty sure they're EC3s. And they were among my very favorite headphones because of the replaceable tips that I could put on that effectively were earplug material. And so I have like a bag of 500 of these tips. Could just, when I wear them out, just swap them back out and put them on. But maybe not the most. They had versions that incorporated better bass and better drivers for bass. But the E3Cs for just general listening, I'm just glad I found them again. Because recently I've been testing out, it's like when you use the Bose to, like a version of the Bose to compare to other things. It's good to have a few pairs of earbuds around to compare with. And I was just super stoked to find those again. Thank you, Shure. Actually, they replaced those once under warranty.
Nice.
Almost no questions asked. It was like, oh, you got them back to us. Here's a new pair. It's one nice thing dealing with a company based out of Illinois. Palatine, Illinois, shout out, I think. That's where they're located. I used to spend many a summer there. And then I fired up Amazon last week to see if Thursday night football was, for the initial football game at least, I believe the season started on that Thursday night. Fired up the Amazon app, and it's saying that their first game is going to be coming up next week on the 28th, which will be their streaming of content. And I just want to say I'm thankful that they're using the NBC CBS feeds at 1080i. Instead of any time I watch a game on Fox or ESPN and 720p on a 4K display, it starts to look a little soft. And one thing I would just like to see or maybe hope for is that one of these Thursday night football games streaming through Amazon, maybe they would push it up to maybe 4K.
Maybe
4K 60 or even better HDR. I would hope they would do at least one test this year, this season like that. So
funny.
But otherwise, it's getting high time in baseball season. So,
oh my goodness. Baseball season.
It's almost over. Almost.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, we want to remind you all that avxl.com is a place to get all of our links. If you have a moment to review AVXL on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcatching locality is, we would greatly appreciate it. And we would even more appreciate it if you would like to donate to the cause at patreon.com/avxl. At the higher levels, you even get monthly hangouts with Robert and I. We're going to do our next one on next Sunday, and we'll send an email out to all of our patrons at patreon.com/AVXL. So you know when we're going to be hanging out. Excellent. And waiting with bated breath for your presence.
We do appreciate it.
We really do.
We like your comments, your suggestions. Always good questions.
Yeah. Ask@AVXL.com is the email, at Robert Heron, at Patrick Norton, or at AVXL on Twitter. We got a Facebook page, which is oddly enough known as AVXL. And hey, tell your friends, share it, pass it along. And, let us know what you want us to cover more of. We've been a little seedy or crazy the last couple of weeks.
I've got an upcoming lab day with Samsung coming up, so I'm looking forward to that, actually. I'll have some, hopefully, details about what we can expect to see, hopefully, at CES, but I think this will be more hands-on and fine-tuning of the latest products. Some of those I haven't actually touched yet, so I would like to...
I have a couple of tube amps I've picked up just for Josh Walrath over at PCPer.com.
Aww.
Well, this is going to be interesting.
Well, I'm happy I got my earbuds back. You're happy you got some tube amps for someone else.
Well, it's funny. I'm going to torture him. I'm going to torture him mightily, because it's like, you know, the $50, $60, $80 tube amps versus the, you know, $15 in part CMOI amp, or the sort of rechargeable CMOI amp for JDS Labs, which sells for like 50, 60 bucks. I think I'm going to tell him to get something in an Altoids tin over the... over the tube amps, but I'll know more next week.
That is so excellent.
Come back next week. AVXL.com is the place to find us. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I'm Robert Heron.
Take care, baby. Did I just say take care, baby? Have a great week.
I'm leaving that in.
Go listen to something amazing.
Yes, do that.